Blog Talk Radio.
What's up, everybody, and welcome back. That's right, it's your man in the middle, Anton Scoro, your host with the most. And, hey, you guys, we're back for another episode of Fist Cup Radio, brought to you by RootedIn.com. That's right. Drew, what's going on, brother? You know I got to bring you on the show at least for the first couple of seconds and say what's up, see how your week's going, and ask you about a couple of current events here inside the world of MMA, man. How's the week going so far, brother?
Man, it's Friday. Can't complain. Ready for the long weekend. And get to it, man. What kind of questions do you have for me today?
Well, all right, man. So I want to talk to you a little bit about Paige VanZant. Obviously, a huge, huge win for her against Beck Rawlings. A lot of people are, I guess maybe I shouldn't say a lot of people, but I've heard people talking about the perfect fight for her. And I even heard Stephen Bonner saying it this morning, that the best fight for Paige VanZant right now would be a catchweight fight between her and Ronda Rousey. To me, a little bit ridiculous. I don't think she's ready for that matchup, and I think it would be the UFC potentially throwing away a star that they're building up in Paige VanZant to kind of bring back the old beast like Ronda Rousey, because I think that's a fight Ronda wins 9 out of 10 times, you know, no disrespect to Paige on that.
No, that doesn't make sense to me. I mean, why would they put two of their golden girls up against each other? You know, one would cancel out the other, so it wouldn't make sense to me, if I was UFC, to, you know, as it is, Ronda needs to come back. And I don't know, man. Like you caught me completely off guard with that. I just can't see Paige going anywhere with Ronda. Yes, she beat Beck. I think she caught Beck. It happens. Everybody has a puncher's chance or a kicker's chance. You know what I mean? If that makes sense.
For sure, man. Well, and you know, when you're on Dancing with the Stars, you learn some pretty good footwork. So, hey, man, I'm going to bring you back on maybe a little bit later, but I might as well jump into it. You guys, you tuned in for one reason and one reason only. Today, we've got the UFC's Eric Cope joining us. I'm not sure if you guys are familiar with this, but Eric is actually just coming off of surgery like 2 days ago. I think this is actually day two for him. So we might as well bring on a man who's on no drugs, doesn't do drugs, doesn't take drugs, is doing it the natural way. My man with the most, Mr. Eric Cope, what's up, brother?
Oh, Anton, how's it going?
Oh, man, you know, I almost feel like I'm back in my high school, you know what I mean?
We have some nostalgia going on right now, you know what I'm saying?
See, that's what I was looking for. I was like, man, this is like nostalgic, like this is like classic Fisticuff Radio, you know what I mean? Like, good Lord, I just look at it, Coke, and I go, man, you and me, buddy, we have been everywhere with each other, including a freaking shower.
Damn right, man. We like to keep it close. You know, up close and personal.
Way close. Well, dude, so talk to me, man. Obviously, for people who don't know, like I said, you actually just got pulled from a UFC fight within the last couple of months due to some injuries. And you're just actually coming out from underneath the knife like 2 days ago, man. Talk to me a little bit about the injury. And just basically, I mean, what you would share with people who don't know and what you're going through with the healing process.
Yeah, it was yesterday. I just was under the knife yesterday. It's one of those things. I hurt my ankle years ago, you know, and kind of was, you know, when I was young and stupid, I didn't take care of my injuries. We'll just say that. So pretty much what happened was, probably about a month and a half back, I was doing some Saturday sparring, and my ankle was already aggravated. But like I said, I've been dealing with this injury. Like, it swells up at least once every 2 weeks. Like, you know, if I kick an elbow, I kick a knee, anything like that, it'll swell up. So I've been dealing with it for a while. But this specific day, I was sparring, and I kicked somebody's elbow, and I felt the pain, like, it wasn't the same pain. It was, like, times 10. So pretty much what I found out is I had a, when I got the MRI done, because I literally was out of training for a week. I couldn't walk. I could barely sleep. It hurt so bad. So I went in, and they checked it, and it was actually a bone fragment from a bone spur that I've built up for years there, because I never got it taken care of. I actually think I injured it in my Brookins fight, which is years ago, you know. And that bone spur came off, and I had a piece of bone moving around in there. And I also just over years had a bunch of scar tissue that was built up in my just in my ankle. So what they did was they made two tiny incisions, and they scoped all that crap out. They got the bone out. They got all the scar tissue. So it's nothing like, you know, crazy rehab or anything like that. It's just kind of like I got probably 4 weeks until I can, like, start blasting people again and kicking hard. But I'll be back 100%. So.
Hell yeah, man. So, I mean, basically for the silly guys that don't understand the medical time side of things, you basically had what Vanderlei Silva had done to his face to your ankle.
pretty much. I had so much scar tissue built up in there, and like I said, that bone fragment. Whenever I'd kick something, that bone fragment would move ligaments and just kind of aggravate all the things in my ankle. So it's good to just get it out, and it's good to know, you know, that's my left leg, that's my power leg, that's what I knock people out with. So now that it's going to be 100% healthy, and I don't have to worry about that, shit, forget about it, son. You're going to see some lethal body kicks and head kicks coming.
Dude, I don't even care about the kicks, man. I mean, like, the thing for me is you used to fight at 145, and I know how big of a cut it was for you, and it's something that we've always talked about, that you would eventually have to move up. You know, I remember us talking about that probably 4 years ago. And so for me, it's nice to see the move up. But what's even better is the way that you've transitioned, man. Like, a lot of people talked about how Anthony looked from the drop from 155 to 145, how much smaller he looked, how much leaner he looked. Dude, you look freaking huge for a 155er, Coke. Like, you're a monster,
dude,
right now, bro. I'm guessing you're weighing, like, 190, 195.
Yeah, I'm probably 185 right now. And, I mean, I'm keeping lean. But it's that Anthony Johnson syndrome we got going on, you know. It's one of those things where I kind of got belted in just staying at 45 because I was ranked. You know, I didn't want to leave and lose my ranking. So, you know, doing that, and, you know, even when I moved up to 55, it was kind of like, I was like, okay, I don't have to cut weight as serious. So, like, you know, I would wait. I was still doing the same thing. I was waiting to get a fight and then start dieting. Nowadays, ever since my last fight's a perfect example of just seeing, like, physically how I look. I've changed my lifestyle. You know, I'm not eating dirty all the time. I'm eating all clean food. You know, if I have a cheat, I have one cheat day a week, you know. And I'm telling you, man, I put on a lot of good size, a lot of good functional size. And 55 definitely feels like my weight class now.
Well, and that's the thing too, man. Like, the weight that you put on, like I said, man, you're huge. Like, you've gotten big, but you still got abs. You're still shredded. And like you said, it's good weight. It's not like you put on the weight that guys put on when they don't have a fight where the abs disappear, you're eating ice cream. Like, I mean, dude, you're the guy that's always been an eater. You've always been an eater. That's the one thing that, like, if anybody knows you, they know you love food. You know what I mean? Like, So for me, it's nice to see the change, though, because I remember seeing the cheat meals. I remember seeing the shit food and the garbage that you were putting in you when you were out of camp. But, I mean, I think that's the young side, you know. But now as you're getting older, you realize, just like I do, you've got to take better care of yourself because the body doesn't function as good.
Totally. And that, I mean, you hit nail right on the head, dude. Like, that's a young man's game. You know, I used to be able to binge eat and do shit like that and then cut to 45. You know, I can't do that anymore. Just at 55, I mean, it's kind of one of those things where, you know, you get older and you learn. You know, that's how humans learn. We make mistakes. But even when I was young, I wish I would have been doing it the way I'm doing it now. You know what I'm saying? I would have performed so much better. Everything would have been so much better. But, you know, it's like I said, we learn from those mistakes. And now, man, I got it figured out. You know, I just coming off surgery. I'm eating clean. I got my Fresh Fit pack, my food prep guy that hooked me up. I got all that stuff set up, and you know, just eating clean. And I want to get to the point where I can jump right back into training. I got to take a fight right away. You know, I'll be able to make the weight. You know, that's my goal. I want to get one more fight in here by the end of the year.
I was going to say, man, I know we're talking December time frame, or at least aiming for a December time frame. So my thing is this too, Eric. I wanted to talk to you a little bit about training and how it's changed for you, because one thing that we're hearing a lot more of is guys are no longer sparring inside of camp. I mean, obviously, Robbie Lawler is probably the biggest name that comes to mind, and that's something that we've heard for years is Robbie hasn't really sparred in or out of camp for quite some time. But now we're hearing Donald Cerrone no longer spar. Give me your thoughts on this new change up of the game, because, I mean, it's like I've always said, at some point you've learned how to fight. You're not going to do anything different getting punched in the face in training camp to learn how to fight.
Right.
But, I mean, well, what are your thoughts on that? Because I know you're still sparring. I know guys at Rufus Sport are still sparring. So, I mean, give me your thoughts on guys not sparring and where you, stand when it comes to the topic.
You know, I agree and I disagree with it, if that makes any sense. I definitely see the reasoning behind it. And even Duke, even our coach, even said, you know, his last couple fights, he didn't have any sparring partners. You know, him and Kush were doing all pad work and getting in shape that way. So you're right. You know, once you get to a certain point, and once you're like Donald Cerrone, you've had how many fights in the UFC? Like, you're not going to forget how to fight. You're just kind of keeping those tools sharp, you know? So on that side, I agree. On the other side, I feel like sparring for me, sparring is like, it gets you zoned out for the fight. It's the closest thing to a fight that you're going to have. You know what I'm saying? So like, it's more like, I like to use it not only to work my game plan, but just on the mentality side of it. And it's one of those things, I understand guys are having concussions, stuff like that. You know, you got to be safe. But, I mean, the whole goal in fighting is to hit and not get hit. You know what I'm saying? And there's no better way to practice that and learn that than spar. So, you know, I'm kind of in between. But, you know, I can see it as guys get older and, you know, wear and tear and you've got a lot of miles on your body. I could definitely see it because, I mean, like I said, my own coach even admitted his last couple fights he didn't spar. You know, he hit the pad work super hard. And so, yeah, I mean, you might start seeing more people going that route, but I don't know. Maybe I just like to spar, you know?
Go ahead. I was just going to call you an asshole, brother. I was just going to say you're an asshole who likes to punch people in the face. That's what it really comes down to.
That's probably what it is. You're probably right. Oh, man.
So, all right, let's talk a little bit about the move up to 155, because we touched base briefly on it with us saying that it was going to happen and you knew it was something that was going to happen. When you did decide to make the move, I mean, that's not an easy move for guys to make, because I think inside of this sport, you only get so many times to change weight classes, you know, and so for you, was there any concern that maybe it was too soon? Was there any concern that maybe it was going to be a much more difficult weight class because you were going to be moving up and fighting bigger guys? I mean, talk to me about the thought process before the last fight when you decided, hey, this is the time to do it, and we're moving up.
I made it really easy on myself. It wasn't hard at all. It was actually before the Poirier fight. It was while I was cutting weight for the Poirier fight, I said, nope, win or lose, this is my last one at 45. I'm not doing this anymore. And it's one of those things, man, like fighters know their body. When your body's telling you something, that it's telling you that for a reason, you know? And with that cut with Poirier, I was about, I think it was even the week of, like when I started that last hard push for the cut, I was like, yep, this is it. I'm like 100%. I could win this by a devastating KO and I would still say, nope, I'm going up 55, you know? So it was that hard of a cut. I mean, my body fat was dangerously low and it just didn't make any sense. You know, there was no reason to put my body through it. There's no reason to kill myself just to make weight. You know, I want to be here to perform, put on a good show for people and, you know, perform well for myself. And even in that fight, yeah, I mean, it showed in that fight, you know, usually I'm fast, I'm light on my feet. In that fight, I was like, you know, stuck in the mud. I was barely moving, you know, all my speed was gone, all my pop, all my power was gone. So like I said, I knew the week of that fight I was moving up.
So when you decided to make that move, I mean, obviously, like you said, there wasn't really much of a choice. It was like, hey, this is it's time. I don't have really much many other options.
Yeah.
What goes through your head, man? Do you instantly, after the Poirier fight, did you instantly start looking at that division? I mean, obviously, you're very familiar with that division because Anthony was the champion of it. You're one of Anthony's main training partners when he's in Wisconsin. So for me, I'm curious, like, how much thought went into who was in that division and looking at potential fights and I guess the path that it would take for you to get to what the ultimate goal is, which is still being a UFC champion?
Yeah. I mean, obviously it goes through your mind. Probably what went through my mind is I'm like, well, I'm moving up in the weight class and I'm going into arguably the most stacked division in the UFC. You know, there's so many good guys at 155. But it's one of those things that I know what I'm capable of. I know how good I am. And I know when I'm at my A game, I'm a champion. You know, I know that. So, at first I was like, oh, damn, 55. You know, these guys are going to be bigger. Oh, we got, you know, a stacked class. But then, I mean, every fighter should have that complex. Like, I don't care what division I'm going into, I'm going to run this shit. You know? So,
yeah.
To me, I may have thought about it faintly, but other than that, man, no, it doesn't matter. If I go up to 170, I'd go up to 170. I'm confident I could beat everybody there, you know? It's every fighter should have that mentality. And like I said, you know, I perform better at 55. I should have been at 55 years ago. Me and Anthony used to joke about it. We used to be like, man, Eric's bigger than Anthony, and he fights at 45, and Anthony's fighting at 55. We were joking about that in WEC days, you know? So it's just kind of funny how now we've reversed roles, you know? So, I think, you know, it happened obviously for a reason. I mean, this is where it should have been years ago, but, I don't even really think about it too much, man. We just take it one fight at a time and, you know, work our way up the ladder. That's the only way you can do it.
That's it, man. And, you know, you speak of, like, when you're on your game, you know that you're a champion. And you know, that's something I've been screaming for years here on the sidelines. I always wonder, Eric, as your career progresses, and I mean, like, dude, you're one of my best friends in the sport. I mean, I have a relationship with you outside of the show, I mean, on a personal level and all that. And it's something that, I mean, dude, I don't really talk to you about your fight career when we're not on the radio. But there's questions that I've always wondered – and that I like to ask is, as we go a year down the road, 3 years down the road, 5 years down the road, and that's when you look back at the Aldo fight, man, the fight that never happened. Mm-hmm. Now that you're at this stage of your career, do you think that it was meant to not happen? Like, do you think that had that fight happened, it could have had negative impacts on your career? Do you think that you were technically ready to fight a guy like Aldo at the point that they were getting ready to have you fight him back then? Now that you're at this point in your career, I mean, do you think that it's kind of a blessing in disguise that it didn't happen? Or do you still,
you know,
sit there and think, like, damn, it should have happened?
I still think, damn, it should have happened. I still think, damn, it should have happened. It's one of those things, man. I beat myself up about that a lot. And, you know, like, I've talked about it before. After that fight was taken away from me, that's where I was kind of on a downslide. I lost a bunch of motivation. People don't understand how much I put almost an entire year, because he got injured and we moved the fight again. I pretty much trained an entire year for that guy, and I dieted the entire time. I was in the best shape of my life. I was probably walking around like 160, 158 the entire camp, which for me is unreal. Like, that just doesn't happen.
Right.
You know, I was in such good fight shape. You know, I was ready for that fight. And, I mean, look at the guy that dethroned Aldo. What was he? He was a big 45er that's a southpaw, you know? I've been saying that shit for years, you know? I know that style. I know the style that gives him problems. I know what it takes to beat, you know? So I used to beat myself up about it. I don't beat myself up about it anymore, because what's done is done. I've moved on, you know? But definitely at the time, damn, I wish that would have happened for sure. Because people, you know, I was such a big underdog. That's when Aldo was like untouchable. But I knew what Conor did to Aldo. I knew that shit was possible. I knew it, you know? So, I wish the fight would have happened, but you know, it's kind of that area where I'm so sick of thinking about it. And I, you know, it's kind of like, if I don't let it go, I should be looking forward to the future, not dwelling on the past, you know? So
for sure.
Yeah. And that's where I'm, you know, that's where I'm sitting at lightweight. You know, this is kind of like, that's why, you know, my nickname now, the Phoenix. I'm a Phoenix, man. I'm not the same guy I was before. I was kind of, after I lost that Aldo shot and I was on that losing streak, I was kind of a shell of my former self. And I'm man enough to tell you that. I'm man enough to sit here and say, I didn't give it my all. I was fighting more for money. I wasn't all in it like I was before. I wasn't as obsessed as I was before. Now I feel like, you know, I've matured. I've learned my lessons. I'm not that young guy anymore. I've taken good things from that young, crazy son of a bitch. I've taken things from that guy, and I've brought him along, but I've matured, and you can see it in my training. You can see it in my diet. You can see it in just my day-to-day life, the way I act. I'm a new person. I'm a better version. I'm a better version of Eric.
Dude, so every once in a while I get this idea to open my mouth and say things that I know I'm going to probably regret that I shouldn't have said. But, dude, you know, it's me, though, bro. Like, I mean, it's just funny because I remember meeting you and then through you meeting Anthony Pettis, you know what I mean? And like, mm-hmm. I think that you guys have always had this, like, connection that you guys are cut from the same cloth, just different parts of the piece of fabric, you know what I mean? Like different ends of the fabric, but the same piece of cloth. Like there's so much about you guys that kind of coexist, and without each other, I don't think it would exist the way that it does. And the thing for me is I've always said I'm kind of glad that you didn't get the Aldo shot, because had you got the Aldo shot and won, like, hey, bro, I mean, I think for a time there, Anthony changed too. And I think it was from the belt. I think it was from the money. I think it was from having the cameras in his face. And like, dude, it's hard not to be the man when you're constantly told you're the man, you know what I mean? But now I think, like, dude, Anthony is back to being the Anthony that he was when him and Pat Barry called me on the road driving through a blizzard to call into the show, you know? Like, that's the Anthony I see now. Like, it's about the girls, it's about his girl, it's about becoming the best he can be, and it's like a newer, humbled Anthony Pettis is back with us. And that's the thing that I love, is like hearing you say, I have that motivation again now too. I'm not out here just for a paycheck. I'm back doing what I love. And I think that's the same thing with Anthony. Like, you guys both came back at the same exact time, and you guys both kind of went away almost at the exact same time. So it's awesome for me to see you guys both back in that same zone.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. Really, anyone that makes it far in athletics, it's not even fighting. You know, anybody that, you know, makes it big and everybody knows who you are, everybody wants to pop bottles all, you know, every weekend. You know, I've been there. I've been there, and that it's a young man's game. And you notice you go through your money super fast, and then all it becomes is money to you. You know, that's not why I started this. I started this in my brother's basement, an 8x8 mat. You know, I started this journey, and the journey wasn't to make a bunch of money, because obviously fighting locally in that circuit at the time, you weren't making any money. I was making 200, 400 bucks, you know? So, it's not about the money. You know, money is a necessity. We need it. So yes, I got to get paid to fight because I got to live. But the end all, the whole reason I started this game is the one way I can guarantee immortality is making my name live on forever. When I'm gone, people remember me. I am immortal in a way. That's my goal. I want to be one of the greatest. So it's kind of, I had to humble myself, and I even had to tear myself down, man. I was in a slump there. I was in a slump for a while, and I was like, man, I'm not sure. I've been doing this for so long. I'm not sure if I want to do it. I had to get to the low of the low. Like, the lowest I've ever been, like where I felt like a bitch. I felt like I didn't want to fight. I didn't want to do this anymore. And when I broke myself down that low, and then I built myself up, I got a lot stronger. Because I've seen that low point. Once I started building myself up, I'm like, well, shit, if I can get through that, nobody's going to fucking stop me. You know, I'm gonna tear this division a new asshole. So that's how it, and like I said, that's how human beings are, man. We learn from mistakes, and I've made a lot of mistakes. I'm not going to sit here and say I did everything right, but I still got a lot of time in this sport, and now I'm in my peak years. Now it's time to make this shit happen. Now it's time for me to become a champion.
Well, and I love to hear it, Coach, because I've sat here and watched, and, dude, the potential that you've always had, I think, came full circle this last fight. I mean, this last mm-hmm. fight before having to get surgery, dude, you went out there and crushed old boy. I mean, it was like, mm-hmm. welcome to 155 pounds Eric Coke. So mm-hmm. I'm curious, perfect world for the Cokehead. December, you get a call. Joe Silva says, hey, bud, it's going to be the last card that I match. Don't think I'm going to be here in 2017. I think it's a rumor that I heard yesterday. So who do you want? Yeah, I'm going out with a bang. Love you, Eric Coke. Who do you want at 155 come December?
Oh, shit. Well, shit, man. There's so many guys. I feel so bad for Drew Dober that – you know, I want that fight to happen just because I've got injured twice when we were slated to fight. There's also Drill Proctor. Dude, honestly, Anton, I'll fight anybody. It doesn't even matter. Give me Nate Diaz. You know, I don't give a shit. You know, like, it's just I hate to be that guy because there's, you know, everybody's like, I'll fight anybody. I mean, true, but really, I don't care. I don't care. I know I got to work through all of them anyway. It doesn't matter what order they're in. Just give me somebody, you know. So, fuck it, man. Give me anybody. If for whatever reason, I know I'm not there. Fuck, I'll fight Conor McGregor. Let's go. You know, like, I don't give a shit. This is a fighting game.
He don't want that, bro. He don't want that.
Nah.
Here's the difference between you and Nate Diaz. Nate Diaz is a number puncher. He's going to put 289 punches on you in a fight. Here's the difference. Eric Coach is going to put 13 on you, and then 13 are going to put your ass out.
They're going to be surgical. Surgical, brother. Surgical. But,
You said
you were going to bring up that fight, too. You said we were going to talk about that.
Oh, yeah. Let's talk about that for a minute. So you were rooting for Nate Diaz, you said, and we talked a little bit about this yesterday on Twitch. If people don't know, you can catch Coach streaming all the time on Twitch. If he wasn't a professional fighter, he would be a fat kid eating pizza in his mom's basement playing Destiny.
you know.
But so you were going for Diaz, but you said that you saw it in Conor's favor. Talk to me a little bit about how you saw it, I guess, being scored for Conor this time.
Well, thinking about it, like, you got to think when a fight goes down, the way they judge rounds. I just feel... I mean, the first round, Conor knocked him down, what, three times? Was it something like that?
Twice, I think. Twice in the first and once in the second.
So, yeah, so he won that round. He dropped him in the second. So you got to give him those two rounds. Nate obviously won the third. Fourth was kind of a toss. I felt like Conor kind of came back in the fourth, but I still gave it to – no, I did give it to Conor, didn't I? I give fifth to Nate, I think. I'm not sure how it goes. All I remember is I just feel like round-wise, Conor just edged it out. And I know they brought out the fight statistics, and they showed, like, number of strikes, significant strikes. But if you – I feel like looking at the strikes, like, I feel like Conor landed more significant strikes, like more damaging strikes than Nate did. Now, that being said – that I didn't think Conor was making it out of the third. I'm surprised he was able to hang in there, dude, because it looked like it was going to be a repeat of the first one.
Yeah, it really did. And, you know, here's the one question that I have for you, Eric, because you're a fighter. You end up having to deal with this stuff. You end up having to deal with the way that cards get scored, all of that. A knockdown. Does a knockdown really justify winning a round if you don't do anything with the knockdowns? Because what I mean by that is Connor's first two knockdowns of Nate in the first round, he didn't really capitalize on them. He hit Nate. Nate stumbled, hit the ground, but Nate popped back up. Connor didn't inflict any more damage because of the knockdown. So it would almost be like me double-legging you and then backing up off of the double-leg and standing up and just looking at you like, hey, I got you, or doing a trip. I guess it would be comparable to a big trip and a push for me. But then you're not doing anything with it, not advancing position or anything.
See, well, I disagree just because, I mean, when you knock somebody down, that's a damage. That's you're damaging. I mean, in boxing, when you knock somebody down, a lot of times it's a 10-8 round. You know, so I mean, even if you don't do anything with it, if let's say Connor knocks down Nate, okay, well, if Nate barely lands any punches and he doesn't knock down Connor, I'm gonna give it to Connor because he did more damage. You know, you see what I'm saying? That's where it gets a little more difficult. Like if you get somebody gets dropped, okay, he lets them up, and then the other guy drops him, gets on top and starts beating his ass. Okay, I'm gonna give it to that guy, but. A knockdown is more than a takedown because a knockdown is actual damage. A takedown is not damage. You're just putting them in the position you want to put them in. You're kind of dictating that. When you knock somebody down, I mean, you're concussing somebody. You're doing brain damage, you know?
That's true. I guess that's a very valid point, man. I've never stopped and thought about it to that level. I just always thought, you know, if you do something to put your opponent on the ground and you don't advance position on it, I mean, how hurt is a guy if you hit him and knock him down, but you don't advance position on him? Because if we're on the street and I hurt you, I'm jumping on you like a pit bull. So my guess is if you don't jump on the guy, you really don't have him that hurt. And so that's why you're not jumping on him, because you know he's still coherent. You know he's still dangerous. So it's probably best to let him stand up and continue the fight where you have the advantage.
Well, we got to give Nate Diaz credit, too, because that guy's recovery is insane. You know, like you can hurt him, but he's like, he comes to right away. So, I mean, that's what Connor was doing. Connor knocked him down and Connor saw, okay, I'm not getting in this guy's guard. You know, Connor's not stupid. He knows I'm not going to go to the ground with Nate Diaz. Nate Diaz has a huge advantage over Connor, you know, on the ground. So, I think that's what he's playing. And he knew, you know, if he got the knockdowns, he would be, you know, he'd be edging up on the scorecards. But, dude, honestly, it's one of those fights where it could have gone either way, and you can't be mad about it. That's how close it was. You know, it was super close. Connor was – what have I said? I swear I've said it on your show before. I swear I've said even if I fought Nate Diaz, I'd tell him exactly – right to his face what I'd do to him. Chop that lead leg. Chop that lead leg. I've said it. And Connor's leg kicks aren't even that good. I don't know if anybody saw – I mean – I love leg kicks. I'm a good leg kicker, but like Connor's leg kicks were not great. They weren't good. He loaded up on them, and I mean that's how he broke his foot, because the one kick that Nate checked, it broke his foot. You know, but I mean he was landing those. He was making that leg mash, and I think that set up, you know, a lot of the significant strikes that Connor landed. But man, like I said, 10 more seconds. If Nate had 10 more seconds that third round, they would have stopped that fight. So,
guaranteed.
I mean, it also makes you wonder. It makes you wonder, like, you know, what's that look like in the judge's eyes? You know, like, that's, I mean, the fight was pretty much over. You know what I'm saying? It wasn't over, but, I mean, pretty much. Like, I couldn't believe Connor came back. I couldn't believe that he, like, hung in there and was able to pull it off. Because honestly, it went into fourth round. I'm like, oh, he's done. He's getting TKO'd at least halfway through this round. You know, so
that being said, it brings up the other question I wanted to talk to you about when it comes to Conor McGregor, because you've been one guy that I know has been vocal. I mean, not vocal to the point where you're going out and calling the guy out and saying anything. But I don't think you were his biggest fan before this fight. I think it's been one of those things where you're like, hey, come on up to 155, buddy. I'll be more than happy to meet you there. Like, I'll introduce you to the weight class. So that being said, after this fight, is there a new level of respect for Conor McGregor as a person and as a fighter, or is it still he's really not your favorite guy just by the way he acts? And, you know, as a fighter, you've got to respect him. There's no doubt about that. But as a person, do you have a newfound respect?
I mean, I've always respected the guy. The guy's good. And anybody that buys into his shit talking and thinks that he's an asshole, he's not an asshole, dude. He sells. He makes money. That's what he does. You know, you can see him and Nate talk shit, and then after the fight, they're laughing it up like, man, we just made millions of dollars. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not saying he's a bad guy. I don't have any hate for him. But, you know, he is making a shit ton of money, and he's right. He's right. Whoever fights him is going to make a bunch of money. So you're damn right I want to fight him because I want a bunch of money and I want to beat him. You know, I want both of them. I want that win under my belt and I want all that money. So it's one of those things that there's no hate. There's nothing but respect. He's really good. He's really good. I'm not saying he's not good. But coming up to 55, it is a different thing. And I'm you know, I've been here for a couple years, but, you know, I'm still kind of new to the 155 you know, region, whatever the class, I'm still kind of new to it. So it's one of those things. If you want to come up, let's go, you know, we were both at 145.
Hell yeah.
I go 155, no problem, you know? So, and it's also another one of those things. It's funny you bring it up. I mean, you know, my dad, he's always complaining about my weight. We've talked about it so many times, but he, you know, even the end of my career, I've said, you know, I could see the end of my career. I'm fighting at 170, you know, and it, look at Connor's already jumping up to 170. He's already doing shit that I want to do, you know? So I don't know, man, let me get a couple wins under my belt and talk some shit and maybe I can set something up, you know?
Yeah. So that's one thing I want to talk about. Two other things I want to talk about before I let you go, Eric. I've got to bring up Doug Koch. What up, Doug? Doug's the man, for anybody who doesn't know, that's Eric's dad. But he's always raised you and Keone to be humble guys, but very strong in your beliefs and standing up for what you guys feel right? So I've always felt that your dad has done a freaking phenomenal job on raising, like, quality human beings in you and your brother and the rest of the family, you know what I mean? Even the way your dad carries himself. So I can never imagine you being the guy just to go out there and start pulling some Conor McGregor, I'm going to trash talk the whole division, things like that. But like you said, it sells fights. It's the main reason why Nate Diaz and Conor McGregor made an estimated $28 million off their payroll, just the two of them. And the reason for it is because regardless if you bought that pay-per-view, you were doing one of two things. You were either rooting against Nate Diaz or you were rooting against Conor McGregor. There's no way that you hated both of them and you were on one side or the other, and it's because of the way they shit-talked and built up to the fight. So, that being said, could you ever be those guys? Could we ever see Eric Koch just start becoming a guy who ran his mouth because it makes money and it settles?
You know, it's one of those things. I come from traditional martial arts, so I'm always, you know, very, very disciplined and I'm very respectful. But it's what, you know, I go with the philosophy, I try to make money, you know, making my actions show and do, you know, so like, I'm not a big shit talker. I've never been that way. But on the other side, I did grow up in a rough area. I went to a rough school. You know, I've been on the streets. I had a lot of friends on the streets. It's one of those things that if somebody comes at me a wrong way, if I were to say have a fight with Conor McGregor, you know Conor McGregor can talk shit. Well, if you talk shit, I'm not going to be a little bitch. You know what I'm saying? So I'm going to come back at you. So I let them dictate what they want to do. Other than that, I'm just going to get in there, whip your ass, make money, and raise, you know, go up the ladder. So it's really that guy's call because I don't have anything personally against any of these guys. You know, if they want to make it personal, then they make it personal. You know, that's completely up to them. So it's kind of both, man. It's kind of both ways. I put it in their hands, man. If somebody wants to talk shit, all right, well, let's go. You know, I'm not going to be a little bitch. I'm not going to sit back and take that shit, you know? So bring it. Bring it.
And you know, I feel bad. I feel bad for the first opponent that does it when the fight's in Vegas, because then see, like, if it's in Milwaukee, if it's in Germany, Yeah, right. I'm not there. But if they start talking shit halfway through the camp, I'm going to know about it. And then I'm going to come down to the venue, and we don't got to throw cans. We can throw hands. I'll be that crazy white boy that's not a fighter, and I'll be the one like Nick Diaz and crew. Like, we bombing on you, bro. You don't got to worry about being there and coke. You got to see his crazy-ass homies.
We got a whole group. We rolling.
That's, bro, me and Wes is dropping bones, brother. It's like a new Ludacris song. all right, man. The last thing I've got to ask, and it's something that, I've got to bring up. I've got to bring up your buddy Phil Brooks. You're in camp with him. You're training with him. You work with him. You guys are actually good friends. For people who don't know, I think you and Phil have actually created a very good bond and friendship throughout his time of being at Rufus Sports. I don't really want to ask you anything about, like, oh, so is it true that he lost all these sparring matches? Is it true that he's not that good? I really don't care. My question for you, Eric Koch, is what would you say to the people that want to sit there and trash Phil and say he doesn't deserve a spot at the pay-per-view? Because for me, I'm going to be honest with you. Do I think that Phil Brooks deserves a spot on the pay-per-view card? I don't. But you know what? Phil Brooks, the entertainer, absolutely. He's one of the biggest names to ever enter the octagon before becoming a fighter. I mean, look at what they did with Brock Lesnar. I mean, it's the exact same thing. It's entertainment, so it has to happen. But
yeah,
I also think you've got to commend the guy, because to go out there in front of millions of people with a chance of embarrassing yourself, of having people say you're the worst striker to ever enter the cage, to say that you didn't deserve it, dude, that takes a lot of balls to put yourself out there like that and make yourself vulnerable and still be willing to go through with it. You know, I commend the hell out of him for just doing that. Whether he deserves a spot or not, good for you, freaking Phil Brooks, for being a freaking man and not letting what other people think or say dictate one bit of what you're doing, man.
Damn right, dude. And you just said it, because you got a bunch of people hating on it, and they're like, oh, man, he doesn't deserve it. A lot of people don't know the story, though. There's a story behind it.
It wasn't like Phil went to Dana's like, I want to fight in the UFC, put me in. He said, hey, you know, I want to fight, and he was actually talking more like a local circuit, you know? And it was one of those things where it came up, and Dana's like, oh, shit, we'll have you fight here, you know? And it was more of a thing where Phil felt like, He would have been an asshole if he didn't take a once in a lifetime opportunity like that, you know. And to all the people that talk shit, I'm like, okay, so this guy who is a star entertainer, he is a celebrity, he's got a huge following. He leaves WWE where he's making millions of dollars. Okay, he's making a shit ton of money. He leaves that to jump into MMA and fight. And I mean, it's as real as it gets, right? Like UFC is real as it gets. He's fighting people in front of millions, getting ridiculed, and he's still going through with it. You know what I'm saying? Like that, he's got more balls than anybody else. You know? And so,
yeah.
Like, for the people talking shit, I'm like, you know, it's one of those things, man. He's came a long, like a long way. He's got a lot better. I think he's gonna do great. But it's one of those things. I even said it in an interview yesterday. Win or lose, you gotta respect the fucking guy. You have to. You can't sit there on your couch and talk shit when this dude has literally already done so much, and now he's just doing this because he wants to prove it to himself. He wants to test himself. That's gangster. That's gangster as hell. You know, he don't need the money.
Dude, absolutely.
You know what I'm saying? It's gangster as hell. So, like, more respect for Phil than, dude, like, dude's a boss. He's already a boss in my book. So, you know, people talking shit. You know, same shit, man. You talk shit, and I see it or I hear it in front of my face. You got me on you. You know, we'll start some more of that Diaz brother shit. You know, I don't take that shit.
Hell yeah.
Fuck you.
Well, you know, I mean, the reality of it is, like you said, he doesn't need the money. It's not like Phil Brooks is doing this because he's broke. It's not like he's like, dude, I don't have any other options. Like, what do I do? Well, I guess I'll go into the UFC, take one fight and make $100 million and never have to do it again. I'm sure the dude's not even getting paid. I mean, Conor and Dia, dude, he got paid a lot more in the WWE. Let's just put it that way. So
exactly.
That being said, he could have lost the smokers in the gym that everybody wants to talk about. And you know what, dude? He could have walked away. He could have just disappeared, never said another word, never did another interview. And I'm telling you, you know what would have happened? No one would have ever mentioned him ever again. He would have been hindsight. It would have been like Jose Canseco when he fought in K1. Only the hardcores are going to remember that shit. You know what I mean? And so it's like nobody would have cared.